quarter on? And the answer is no. That was an easy question. But also wins him a copy of the notes for the whole course of himself right now.
And my second question is,
what's your question?
Can you explain a comparison here?
Okay, in which context? Sequences, series, intervals?
Use series.
Okay. So let's see. So comparison is something that you use for improper integrals, for example, to show convergence or divergence. Comparison is something you can also use for sequences to see whether or not a sequence converges or diverges. So you don't do that so much. And you can also use it for series to, for example, if you have a series and if you have a series sum a sub n, n equals, let's say, 1 to infinity, and another series b sub n, n equals 1 to infinity, and the b sub n and a sub n are all, let's say, let's just assume they're all positive, then this is very similar to what we have in proper integrals, but if the a sub n are all less than or equal to the b sub n, and the sum of the b sub n converges, then so does the sum of the a sub n. It's not really surprising because the sum of the a sub n is always less than or equal to the sum of the b sub n, so if this converges, so will this. So one statement is a sub n less than or equal to b sub n for all n, and sum b sub n converges. This implies the sum of the a sub n converges. And this can be really useful. Here's an example application. I'll just make up an infinite sum that looks pretty terrifying. 1 over n cubed plus e to the minus n squared plus the absolute value of cosine of n plus 2006. So here's an infinite sum. Does it converge or diverge? Stop it.
Converges because everything else is always positive. So 1 to 1 over n 3 puts upper bound of the whole sum. And we know that's converging. That's a p series.
Okay. So can you get it directly from what I wrote down here then? So one thing you said was that you have a p series. In particular, you have a sum 1 over n cubed, that's related to the series I just wrote down. And what's the relation between the terms of the first series and the terms of the second series? Which are bigger? Now it's a little tricky because they're inverted, that each one is 1 over something. But if you want to decide whether 1 over a is less than or equal to 1 over b, just cross-multiply. And you're asking, is b less than or equal to a? So when you flip them over, the direction of the inequality switches. So if you can decide if the denominators here are always, say, smaller than the denominator here, that would tell you that the terms here are bigger. But what actually happens here?
Diverges.
What diverges? What?
1 over n.
Okay, you're saying this diverges?
Yeah.
Why does it diverge? I see some head shaking. Why are you shaking your head?
By the p-test,
that
converges.
Okay, by the p-test, it converges. The p-test is just... Well, here's a general fact that's good to know about, which you could be using the integral tests that I talked about last time. Sum 1 over n to the x. This... or p, actually, that's what they call it in the book. Sum 1 over n to the p, it converges for any p at all greater than 1. And it diverges for p less than or equal to 1. And this goes under the name the p-test. And the way that you know this is right is because this sum, whatever it is it's less than or equal to a certain integral, integral 1 to infinity, 1 over x to the p, dx. And you can integrate this and then just look at properties of logs and you'll see that this is true. Okay? So, do you revise your remark?
No, I'm just saying, is it the midterm that's up to 11.2?
Mm-hmm. That's true. But he asked about the comparison test, so I'm telling you. So I'm just curious, which does this converge or diverge? You're absolutely right, it converges. And why does it converge?
It's less than
you told, now you have your head around it, you know what's going on. Each of these terms is less than or equal to each of the terms of this sum. So the whole sum is less than or equal. This one right here converges. It converges to some incredibly mysterious number, but it converges. And consequently, the other one converges. Also, with this comparison idea, you can sometimes show that infinite sums diverge. For example, if the a sub n are all less than or equal to b sub n again, but the sum of the a sub n diverges, that will force the sum of the b sub n to diverge as well. Okay? Yes?
How do you create that one with n before?
How do I what?
How do you create it?
How do I create it? I simply looked at what was the simplest thing that I could think of that's smaller than this denominator, and I thought n cubed, that's a good choice. And I'll answer your question in a second. I thought n cubed, that's a good choice, it's something that's less than or equal to the denominator. And I also happen to have in mind the p-test, which tells me that sum 1 over n cubed converges. But there isn't a formula that takes, you know, as input this, and gives you n cubed. You have to use your imagination. Just relax and do so. Yes, Ms. Butter.
For the critical series A times R the N minus 1, what is A equal to?
Let me write this down. In the series
from N equals 1 to infinity,
geometric series.
Okay. And then what's the question?
What is A equal to?
Could be anything. It's just a specific constant.
How do you find what it is?
Here's an easy trick to find out what A is. If you write out this sum, A is simply going to be the very first term that you write down. Because when N equals 1, this is R to the power of 0. So look at this. If you write this down, it's A times R to the power of 1 minus 1, that's just equal to 1, plus A times R, plus A times R squared, plus dot dot dot. So if the formula for your infinite sum looks exactly like this, then the A is simply the first term when you write it out. Okay? Yes?
I had a question on that one. How do you know it's less than 1?
Right here?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's something that's clearly true for positive n. N cubed is certainly less than or equal to n cubed plus whatever else I'm going to put here that's all.
Oh, you cross multiply?
Yes. Okay. Quick answer is cross multiply. Okay. If you have this, you can divide both sides and you end up getting what you want. Okay. Stefan.
What is the meaning of problem 11 to 10?
I have no idea, because I don't have a textbook and I didn't memorize it.
Explain the difference between these two things look almost the same.
Okay, this question is, what is the meaning of problem 11 to 10? I have no idea what that is yet, but I'm about to find out. Explain the difference between... Okay. That looks pretty funny. So this question is to explain the difference between sum I equals 1 to n a sub I and sum I equal, actually j equals 1 to n a sub j. They're exactly the same number, they're equal. The only difference is you happen to have written the letter differently. So it's, but they're exactly the same number. However, in stark contrast to that, problem 10b In problem 10b, it really is different. You have the sum I equals 1 to n a sub I, and you're supposed to compare that to the following notation, sum I equals 1 to n a sub j. And that's totally different. So you have to be careful here. In the second sum, sort of just to highlight the difference, this is an I. It's very important to write this clearly. And that's a j. This only has meaning if j has some, if somewhere in the context of your discussion you've said what j is. Otherwise, this is completely meaningless. But you might have said somewhere earlier, let's let j equal 5 and then consider the sum as I equals 1 to n a sub j. That would be the sum of a sub 5 over and over. But really, the way in which you might encounter something like this would be, you can imagine there's perhaps an expression like this, sum j equals 1 to 5, sum I equals 1 to 3, a sub j. And inside here, you have an expression that looks just like this. But the meaning of it is that for j equal to 1, you take 3 times this number. For j equals 2, you take 3 times that number, and so on. In fact, the second sum is equal to n times a sub j. Where the meaning of j isn't given in this formula. It must have been given somewhere earlier to make any sense. Does that answer your question, Stefan?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Next question. You have to ask questions. Otherwise, I'll just end the class and you won't get your money's worth. Yes? Can you tell me what number 4 from the practice exam is?
Determine
the
area of the region as equal.
That sounds complicated. Can you hand me number 4? So your question is, do problem 4 from the practice exam. And it's to determine the area of a certain region. I think I'll just draw the region on the blackboard. So it's the region where, of all points between minus 2 and 0, where the y-coordinate lies between the x-axis and the graph of 1 over square root of x plus 2, which takes on the values as x goes to minus 2, it goes to infinity. As x goes to 0, that goes to 1 over root 2. So the graph kind of looks like this. Where that point is square root of 2. No, 1 over square root of 2. And this is the graph of y equals 1 over square root of x plus 2. Okay, so is the question clear? So find the area of the region that I've indicated there, or that I'm about to indicate. As I get this handy chalk. So the question is to find the area of this region, if it in fact is finite. And notice that this goes off to infinity right here. So that's the problem there is that as x goes to minus 2, this denominator goes to infinity. So what kind of integral am I about to write down? So I write integral from minus 2 to 0, 1 over square root of x plus 2 dx. What kind of integral is that? It's an improper integral. Yes. So the definition of this integral, given the impropriety, that is the fact that the function isn't defined at one of the endpoints, the definition of this is it's the limit as s goes to minus 2 from above, in this case, of the integral from s to 0 of 1 over square root of x plus 2 dx. So that's the first thing to worry about. The second thing to worry about is computing this integral. Does anybody have any idea how to compute this integral? Great, I hear u substitution all over the room. That's wonderful. What should we let u be equal to? Wonderful. equals x plus 2, du equals dx. Okay, and now, to be careful of our endpoints, limit as s goes to minus 2 from above, integral. So what does s become when I change the limits using this formula? I want to hear it.
S plus 2.
I heard it, but wasn't quite as much as I was hoping for. That's good. S plus 2, and the upper endpoint is 2. And then here we have 1 over square root of u du. And this looks really good, because this is something that we know how to compute. Limit s goes to, actually it's not going to minus 2 now, it's going to minus, it's actually going to 0 now from above. So limit as s goes to 0 from above of, u to the 2 square root of u. And we're going evaluating from s plus 2 to 2. Okay, are you with me? Apparently not. What did I do wrong? Stefan.
You did a change of variable in the limit with
the. Oh, I left the s in. You're right. I'd have to change this to a t, which is what I want to do. Okay, good. And then I have to change that to a t. Change that to a. By making it more confusing. I think I better not. I think I better leave it like I think it originally. So as to avoid confusion. Okay, are you happy now?
No, because you should not.
Because this should be a 2.
Back to minus 2.
Yeah, minus 2. Are you happy now?
Yes.
All right, and now finish. This is equal to the limit as s goes to minus 2 from above of the quantity 2 square root of 2 minus the quantity 2 square root of s plus 2. And this is very easy to evaluate. It's 2 square root of 2 minus 2 square root of 0. And it's 2 square root of 2. So the area of the orange region is 2 square root of 2. So did that help with your question? What were you stuck on before, if you were just heading down yet? Okay, so the place to start is trying to write down a function so that computing that area is finding the integral of a certain function from one point to another. In other words, you have to think of a way of applying calculus to the problem. But then the tricky thing that makes it involve recent material is that the integral that you write down turns out to be an improper integral. Okay? Yes?
In the comparison test chapter, there's a homework problem for me to prove whether or not 1 over n log n diverges or converges.
Okay.
I can do that using the integral test, but I imagine I'm not supposed to considering what chapter it's in.
So wait. So what was the exact endpoints of integration? And was it 1 over n log n or 1 over n times log n? Was log n in the denominator?
Log n was in the denominator and there's a summation, not integration.
Ah, okay. So it was sum as n goes from 1 to infinity, 1 over n times log n.
Correct.
Okay. And I presume it diverges? Okay. Let's see. So I think you should use the integral. You should use the integral test on this. Right? Like what I talked about from section 11.3.
Yeah, I can. I'm just thinking there's some way
you could
use the comparison
test from that chapter. Maybe. Let's see. Wait, so where was this in the book? It's in 11.2? I don't remember.
11.4.
Well, by 11.4, you certainly have integral comparison. So you should use an integral to do this, if it's in 11.4. I will definitely, I will explain that, but just give him a second. Where is this in the book?
11.4.
Okay, so at that point, already in 11.3, you know how to use integrals to show divergence or convergence. So the way to do this one is to use an integral comparison. And I'll show you how to do it. So the question is, does this converge or diverge? This is a problem from the book, and Stefan was asking about it because he was concerned. And now somebody else, what's your name? Sorry for forgetting. Yeah.
Vil.
Okay. Vil is asking simply how to do it. So the question is, does it converge or diverge? And a good way to decide whether it converges or diverges is to consider the function 1 over x log x. And by the way, just eyeballing it, I really have no idea if it converges or diverges. But we'll see. So consider the function 1 over x log x. The integral from 1 to infinity, or actually from anywhere to infinity, say, I guess 1 is, no, 1's kind of bad because this has a, has a pole there. Let's say from 2 to infinity, this integral, this integral will converge if and only if this infinite sum converges.
Well, why do you choose 2 then?
The reason I chose 2 was that it's kind of problematic to choose 1, since what is log of 1? 0. And this function, I would get a really bad integral if I chose 0. And it might not actually give me any answer. So, also notice I can write this sum from 1 to infinity as, well, the first term of the sum. Oh, this sum didn't start at 1, did it?
No, it started at 2.
It started at 2. So that's another reason to start the integral at 2. This sum actually doesn't start at 1.
Sorry.
So the thing is, you just decide whether or not this converges, and that will tell you whether or not the infinite sum converges. And the reason is because the infinite sum is very close to the integral. And I talked about this at length last time. So the new question is, does this converge or diverge? Actually, I'll just give you the 1 minute spiel again, which is that this infinite sum has these values that it takes on at various points, and this function, let's see how I can draw this. You can draw a bunch of rectangles such that the sum of the area of those rectangles is equal to the infinite sum, and such that up to some very little controlled little thing that doesn't diverge, such that, so here's I'm graphing, say, the function 1 over x log x. I don't know exactly what it looks like, but let's just say it looks basically like this. The sum of all of these rectangles, this is 2, the sum of the areas of these rectangles is equal to this infinite sum. The integral from 2 to infinity of 1 over x log x, that's the area under this entire curve. The area under this entire curve is greater than the sum of all these rectangles except the first one. So if it turns out that this improper integral converges, that means this area right here, as you go out infinitely far, is finite. And that will tell us that the sum of all of these rectangles is also finite, which will mean that this infinite sum converges. Okay? So the question is, does this converge? And now, how do you compute this integral? That looks like integration by, you can do a u substitution.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. Because you can rewrite this as integral from 2 to infinity, 1 over log of x times 1 over x dx. So you haven't done much, but 1 over x dx is the derivative of log of x. So I'll let u be log of x. So u equals log x, du is 1 over x dx, and this integral becomes the integral from log of 2 to, well, I'm going to change so that I have a limit, the limit as t goes to infinity of log of t, 1 over u du. Okay? Are you with me so far? Or did I completely mess up?
Yeah, so far I got.
Anybody else? Does anybody believe what I've written besides Stefan? Not one person believes me. That's probably wrong. I'll wait until at least one other person agrees before I say anything else. So all I'm asking about is, am I doing this improper integral correctly? Is it a substitution?
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. A lot of people agree. Okay, good. So it looks like we're in good shape. And now here, limit t goes to infinity, and then this, the antiderivative, or an antiderivative of 1 over u is log of u. So this is log of that point minus that point, so log of t, log t, as we like to say, minus log of 2. It's actually getting pretty fun. Minus log 2. And what do you know about that limit? Does it converge or diverge? If you try it on your calculator, if you try putting a large value of t in and hitting the log button twice, or whatever your however your calculator works, it won't be a very big number that you get out. But what do you think happens as you take the limit as t goes to infinity?
Zero.
You say zero, you're not right, but we can try again. Any other ideas? What happens as t goes to infinity? You're right, you're absolutely right. As t goes to infinity, log of t goes to infinity, and then log of t goes to infinity as well. So the whole thing goes to infinity. Very good. And what does that mean about the infinite sum? That it diverges. Excellent. So we've now proved that that infinite sum diverges. So notice this is, it's sum 1 over n. You would have known that sum 1 over n, or you know that sum 1 over n diverges, but that doesn't really tell you anything here, even using comparison. This denominator is a little bit bigger than that, but it's not, it's just not quite big enough so that this actually converges, so it diverges. As we saw very precisely using an integral. Again, a summary of the whole thing, you have this infinite sum, and instead you consider this integral because the area which this integral computes is bigger than most of this infinite sum, except for the first term. And you find that the area here, which is bigger than the sum of the orange rectangles, that, oh, actually, we've not proved that it diverges.
Dang it.
Given what I've said so far, exactly what I've said so far, we haven't shown anything at all. Now, there's a slight modification that will easily deal with this, but we haven't shown it diverges yet. The problem is the following. This, the graph of 1 over x log x, this is above the sum of the orange rectangles. It's always above the rectangles. And all we've shown is that area is infinite. That doesn't imply that the area of the rectangles is infinite as well. So we've used it in a backwards way. If we wanted to show that this sum converges, then we could have computed this integral, and if it converged, we would get that the sum converges. We haven't shown that yet. Fortunately, there's a very slight modification to what we did, which is just to draw the rectangles on the other side. Okay? So if you draw the rectangles on the other side like this, then you get a whole bunch of rectangles, such that the sum of the area of those rectangles is again equal to this infinite sum, but that the sum of the areas of these rectangles is less than the, I mean, sorry, is greater than the integral that we just computed. And the integral we just computed is infinite. So using this picture instead, which is just a slightly different formulation of the integral comparison test, you see that this sum diverges. Okay? And you don't have to do any, you don't have to redo this at all. What we did was just fine. It's just that the picture I drew on the board in order to motivate using the integral comparison test wasn't the right picture. Okay, any questions about that? Yes, on this. Any more questions on this? In general, though, to decide whether an infinite sum converges, if you can find a function that takes on the same values and integrate it, it converging tells you whether or not the infinite sum converges. And the above and below business really just affects what happens right at the beginning. So it doesn't make any difference as far as checking divergence or convergence goes. As long as the function that you're, an important thing here is that the function we're considering is a decreasing function. If it goes up and down, it could completely mislead you. Okay, other questions? Yes, Bill.
Substitution, it's integral of, you just want to write
down. Wait, what are you doing?
Substitution, it's one of the homework problems.
Okay, so you have an integral from the homework and you want me to do it.
Yes.
Okay. And it's so complicated that I better be ready to write it down in the bigger box. Okay, so I'm sure I got that part right.
The square root of x squared minus 9.
Where? Like in the numerator or something?
Yeah,
or?
Right.
Oh, man. Okay, x squared minus 9.
Over x cubed.
Divided by x cubed?
Yeah.
Like that? That looks really scary. What could you possibly do in a situation like this? What kind of techniques do you have at your disposal? Let me just go through them. Do you want to use any substitution?
No.
No. Do you want to use integration by parts? No. Do you want to use partial fraction decomposition? No, it's not a rational function. What do you want to use?
Multiply
by a conjugate. There's no, it's all real, so you can't use that. Any other ideas? Trick substitution. Excellent. Everybody has the right idea. Use a trick substitution. That's a great idea. Okay, what trick substitution are we going to use? We have to let x be some trick function. She says secant. Any other ideas? I'm not sure secant's the right one. So we also said 3 sine. So there's more secants out there.
3 secant.
So I like secant.
3 secant.
All right, we'll see what happens with secant. Okay, and then what's the derivative of secant?
Secant.
Okay. Oops. Okay, so here we have integral of 9 secant squared theta minus 9, which I'll write as integral 9 times secant squared theta minus 1, divided by 27 secant cubed theta, and then dx is 3 secant theta tangent theta d theta. Okay? So now what do you want to do here? Okay, so just to quickly divide that, sine squared plus cos squared theta is equal to 1. If you divide both sides by cosine squared, you get secant squared theta plus 1 equals tangent squared theta. That's true, right? Sine squared plus cosine squared is 1. Secant is by definition sine over cosine. And, I wrote this wrong too. Sine over cosine, so this is tangent squared theta plus 1 equals, dividing both sides by cosine equals secant squared theta. Okay, so It works.
Okay.
So this is integral. Take all the constants out and get 1/9 out here. Square root of what?
3
squared. Yep. Square root of tangent squared theta. Very good. Divided by secant cubed. I'll do some cancellation. Oh, I forgot the 3 here, so. And I overheard people saying that. And here's secant squared, actually, tan theta d theta. Okay, how are we doing? Good? Okay. Let's continue on. Now, it's really nice. We have square root of tan squared. So this is 1/3 integral tangent squared theta over secant squared theta d theta. And now I think it's probably a good idea to use the definition of tangent and secant to rewrite this in terms of sine and cosine. Unless there's a mistake, I see a head shaking. Any problems? Yes?
It's supposed to be 1/9 instead of 1/3.
Yeah. It's caught, there's a whole bunch of 3s everywhere. So here I get a 3 in the top. There I get a 3. Coming from that 3 in the substitution in the first place. And here I have a 27. So I get 9 divided by 27 right there. Thanks for checking that. Okay, is it good? Right? So now, Kazim take. This is 1/3, and now tangent is sine over cosine, and this is 1 over cosine, so this is going to be sine squared theta d theta. And how do you integrate sine squared? Right, use the half-angle formula, so it's 1, something cosine 2 theta over 2. Is it plus? Minus? Okay. Okay, and just as a check that that's right, if you put in 0 here, yes, that works out. Sine of 0 is 0, and 1 minus cosine of 0 is also 0. So that's the right sign. And now, probably boring at this point, but it's 1/3 times theta over 2 minus. And here you get sine 2 theta over 4. And now the last thing we have to do is change back from theta to x. And that will be easier if we write sine 2 theta in terms of sine and cosine of theta using the double angle formula. This is sine of 2 sine theta cos theta. Divided by 4, so now cancel that and get 2. Okay, and now we have to write the theta in terms of x. So this is where you draw a triangle. This is 1/3, oh, it should be a constant at this point. Okay, this is. Is equal to a constant plus 1/3 times 1/2, and then theta is secant inverse of x over 3. And then subtract off 1/2 times sine theta cos theta. So what is that? Well, I have some triangle, and it has an angle of theta. And this says that x over 3 is secant of theta. Secant of theta, I guess, hypotenuse over adjacent. Hypotenuse over adjacent. So I guess it's hypotenuse x and adjacent 3, since x over 3 is secant of theta. So using the Pythagorean theorem, you know what the third side is. So it's the thing you have to put here so that when you square this thing and add to it 9, you get x squared. So x squared minus 9 square root. Square root of x squared minus 9. And then cosine of this is, sine of this is root x squared minus 9 over x. And sine of this is 3 over x. So hopefully that's right. Okay, yes, in the front.
So, in the back
of
the book,
there's
the integral
sine squared
theta. So, if you
Can
just go straight to that.
Straight to here?
Yeah.
Yes, you could. Okay. Yeah. The only time that you, on a test, have to show how to get from integral sine squared theta to this is if it said derive, say, from first principles or from something else, how to get from here to there. But if it's in your integral table and you copy it down, you could say, from a table, I know that particular part of the integral. Okay? If you want to be safe, you might want to say that you do this using a half-angle formula, but you don't have to. Okay. Questions? More questions? Yes?
Instead of changing sine 2 theta to sine theta times cosine theta,
yes.
Can you like change to cosine 2 theta in this logic? Or?
How would you change it to cosine 2 theta? How do you do that? I don't know how to do what you're saying. You might be able to. There's a lot of different things you can do. Yeah. It's just easiest this way, because if you write in terms of sine theta and cos theta, you just have to read off. Once you write down this triangle, you have to read off sine and cosine of the angle. That's just easier than reading off sine of twice the angle or cosine of twice the angle. Yes?
Is anything for the first? The term going to be on?
Nothing on purpose. I mean, the goal was to choose problems that test each of the key ideas from when the first midterm was over until section 11.2. It could be that accidentally, for example, you might have to do a U substitution to do an integral, but it's not at all the idea that's trying to be tested.
What about areas?
Probably if you were to see an area under a curve, it would look something like this example I had up here before, where it's improper integral. So it might be that the idea of area under a curve, or the idea of an integral for that matter, would certainly appear on the exam, but only coincidentally. What we're really trying to test is the material from the last one until this one. Okay? But you're not going to see a problem that would have been straight off the last exam. You're going to see problems that are relevant to this chunk of material. Yes?
Are there any nasty integration problems where you have to have a ruler to figure out what the values are?
No. His question is, will there be any nasty integration problems where you're given a graph, like in the book you see some problems like this, and using your ruler you have to kind of try to decide what the value of the function is right here, but you're not really given the exact value. And the answer is no. No ruler will be needed to take this exam. Okay, and no uncomfortable approximation will be needed. Okay, other questions? So to emphasize again, the exam is tonight, right over there in the room next door. It's at 7 o'clock. Make sure you're there on time or early. And I'll be in my office from 5:15 to 6:15. So right after this, to answer questions. My office is in the math building, number 5111. Okay? So I'll sit here for 5 minutes to answer questions informally also. Make sure you bring a sheet also. You're again allowed to have a sheet of paper on the exam. Yes. No, only the question for example, on the last exam from last year, it said you can leave your answer at an exponential point. And if you the problem on this one, only if you ask the word last year. Given what happened last year, you can just make the I do indeed have one copy, but it's yes, but it's not taken.
I have a in the back.
Okay.
and you're laughing. Thanks for the warning. No, that's like the number one thing that there's any problem. So if you're playing another place,
I'm sorry.
Are you just wearing a Bible on
that? Yeah, well,
I know that God said I took a final and I got, food poisoning. I was puking the whole time. It's awful. Yeah, I got food poisoning from eating food from the faculty lounge. They're in my office. I'm going to my office right now. In 18 building at the top of the hill. AP and M are applied physics and mathematics.
Thanks.
Yep. Yes.
I got lost with your last step.
Okay.
This talk about how you got from here to. I was like, okay,
yeah, that's where I had to draw that stupid.
No, it's not stupid. It makes you understand the problem.
So it's right here. I divided the sides by three. And then
we're converting it back to.
Yeah, that's all the basic for you. So if you divide both sides by three, and then apply secant inverse to both sides, you end up with secant inverse of x over 3 equals k.
Okay.
So that's how I got the first term. It's just taking x over 3 equals secant of theta. And this just means that the secant inverse of x over 3 is equal to theta.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's the first term. The second one, I made a white triangle with the property that secant of theta is x over 3. Secant of theta is 1 over cosine.
Right.
Cosine is adjacent over hypotenuse. So secant is hypotenuse over adjacent. So this is true for this triangle. But to make this a right triangle, I have to choose the third side such that the Pythagorean theorem holds. That's what I did. Let's just check it. Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. The sine is rather than that, and the cosine is like that. That's the cosine.
Oh, that is nice. Oh, 1/2. Oh, that's what it is. Oh, okay, I see.
Yep, that's the one. That's the one right here.
Are we able to ask the dependent on the time? No,
yeah.
We didn't.
Well,
can you do number 2 from
what
the
is it?
Tell me out.
Actually, not as hard as it looks. You do what you think you should do.
So you convert it into the sine equals the exponential.
Standard deviation goes to minus 2 to minus 3.
So that's where you put it. That was really close to the core.
You take the, normally we need the ix, but you replace the x by 4. So sine of the sine of x. Need to be ix minus e to the minus ix. If you put 4 over here, you have to replace everywhere there's a 4, and everywhere there's an x, you have to replace by 4x. Okay, and then the rest is just you multiply it out. You multiply it out. You don't have to change back for anything. So really, it's just 2 more steps. One is distribute this, select, and then after that, write down the equal. First, distribute it. That's integral, put this all over here, which is a constant. And then this is e to the 2ix, the exponents add. That's e to the minus 6ix, the exponents add. And this is 1 over 2i. And the first integral is 1 over 2i e to the 2ix. And the second integral is e to the minus 6i, e to the minus 6ix. That is it.
Oh, wow.
And you can just plug in.
You don't have to do anything.
Oh, okay. You're done.
Nothing else to do.
Unless you want to make a simpler just.
No, you don't need to. Yeah. You definitely could. Right. You could factor out the 2i and maybe the 4 down there. Right. You don't have to. This will be a perfectly fine answer. Okay, sure. So it's not so bad. The point of this problem is it tests a whole bunch of things. It tests that you know that sine is this way. It tests that you know what complex integration means. You don't just completely panic when you see it as an I. Yeah. This is testing that you don't completely panic around. And it's also testing your algebra a little bit. So it does test a whole bunch of different things. It's actually not a very hard problem. But don't worry about simplifying.
Right. We can just leave it like that. Okay. Wait, do not erase it.